Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Barbican Screen Talks Archive podcast. This time, it is my privilege to introduce a particularly joyful gem from our archives. A conversation with the creative team behind 2018's triumph of experimental cinema, Madeline's Madeline. They are writer-director Josephine Decker and cinematographer Ashley Connor. Madeline's Madeline stars Helena Howard as Madeline, a teenage actor who has a fraught relationship with her single mum, played by indie darling Miranda July, and an intense relationship with theatre director Evangeline, played by Molly Parker. Evangeline encourages her young star to blur the lines between her stage character and her own real identity. It's not entirely dissimilar from the improvisational production process that filmmaker Decker used to work with actor Howard. And this blurring of reality and fantasy becomes a visual motif in the film. Madeline's Madeline was Decker's third feature film as writer-director. Since this screen talk was recorded in 2019, she's gone on to make a fourth, the loosely biographical drama Shirley, starring Elizabeth Moss as horror writer Shirley Jackson. In this conversation, though, Decker discusses her debut feature, Butter on the Latch, a psychological thriller set and filmed in a Balkan folk music camp. She also mentions her follow-up, the racy rural quasi-thriller Thou Wast Mild and Lovely, and an earlier part-animated short called Me the Terrible. All of these were collaborations with cinematographer Ashley Connor. Connor is a hugely accomplished camera person in her own right. She's done all the cool stuff in her career, including episodes of Broad City, music videos for Jenny Lewis and MGMT, and the upcoming Lena Dunham film Sharp Stick. Still, something magical happens when Ashley and Josephine get together, and the special quality of this collaboration really comes through here, thanks to some expert Q&A moderating from film journalist Beth Webb. You'll hear them talk about how the film is, in Decker's words, a critique of its own process, how all creative processes verge on the unhealthy and obsessive, and why clowning is a lot less fun than it sounds. The pair also reveal their cinematic influences, which you'd otherwise never guess in a million years. And make sure you listen all the way to the end for a surprising question, which elicits an equally surprising response. I'm Eleni Jones, and this is Barbican Screen Talks on Madeline's Madeline with Josephine Decker and Ashley Connor.
I'll start by saying, probably selfishly, what one of my favourite things about the film is, and that's that it never seems to kind of sit still. It feels like this organism that's constantly moving and changing, and watching it, my reactions to the story and to the three central characters changed all the time. And I wanted to know if that was the same for yourself over the lifespan of the film, because there was a process to making the film. And I wonder how your relationship with the story and with those characters changed.
Yeah, well, thank you for that question. I don't think no one has ever asked that before. That's a great question. It's interesting. The character of Madeline, I think you guys can probably tell this is a pretty personal film in a bunch of different ways. There's some meta aspects to it. But Helena, the lead, and I I mean, I basically like kind of discovered her at this acting festival when she was 15 and ran down the hallway. It was like, I want to make something with you. And then we rehearsed with a group of actors for about 6 months. We spent time working with improvisations and sort of devising in a way the film. And Ashley was part of that process. But I think, you know, it's clearly in some ways, I think this film is also a critique of its own process. And there were so many things I learned along the way. And there were so many ways that each of these characters changed. And I think Madeline evolved in so many ways, both as I was getting to know Helena and learn her range and what she could do. And I mean, there's a lot of learning that happened over the course of this film. Yeah. And so Madeline, I think for a long time, it was hard for me to write her because I felt like Helena is not me. I don't know her story. I'm not mentally ill, although this film was deeply inspired by someone very close to me who was hospitalized for mental illness the year that I started making this film. And I'd been very close to that person my whole life. So I'd really, really, that inspired the movie in a way, like some of the deeper questions in it. But I also was very aware of my outsiderness to that story, that even though it was something I had felt like a witness to in intimate ways, I'm not a person who has mental illness. But so for a long time, I feel like the character of Madeline didn't work on the page because I wasn't allowing myself to bring myself fully to it. She was like this tragic figure and I needed her to be more full and alive and like, you know, have flaws and have agency. And so I was like, I have to let myself be her to be able to write this character. And our process was that we worked together with the actress for about 6 months. And then I went away and wrote for about a year on my own. And the other transformation was, the biggest one was probably Miranda July, like what she brought to the mom. I mean, I thought the mom would be the villain of this movie. I was like, I thought she was way worse than Evangeline's character. And then when Miranda played her, you know, it's like you fell in love with the mom and she, there's such a tenderness and like a gentleness to her that I felt suddenly like the empathy and the horror of being a mom. When you feel that your child is unsafe, you'll do anything. Even if the thing that you're doing to quote unquote help her is maybe making her more unsafe and more dependent on you. I'm sure in the moment that's what feels right. You know, it's like you want to keep your kids safe. So the terror and anxiety of the mom, I just really came to, that was a total transformation.
Yeah, it's such a luminous performance from Miranda. I love it. And then your relationship together, I feel like you must have such a strong bond to be able to bring Josephine's vision to the screen in the way that you do. You've collaborated on all of Josephine's films now. I'd love to know how the initial conversations go when you first come together and you start this journey together on a new project. Like, how do those conversations come about? What do you talk about?
I think when we first started collaborating with Me the Terrible, which was our first collaboration, I had just graduated from college and we happened to meet. But for Better on the Latch, I think we were making low budget films at such a low budget where it was truly Josephine, me, and the sound person going into the woods for 7 days to make a project. That was it. And so I was doing lighting, whatever. There was no money involved. There was no producer involved. There was no weight on us to deliver a product. And I think that the collaboration being born of that process is very inherent to the way that we work. Yeah. And so all the films were kind of born of this circumstance. And, you know, I think it's a beautiful testament to Claire Denis and Agnès Godard, whose way of working never worked with a monitor. And when we first started collaborating, there was no monitor, there was no structure, it was very open, it was very trusting, it was very much about experimentation and Josephine letting me kind of follow my intuition. And I think Madeline's Madeline is the culmination of that process where we really were able to see what we had done on her previous films and kind of hone in on certain theoretical concepts that we had started, like focus. Yeah. Or abstraction and ways of degrading the image. And Madeline's Madeline felt like the appropriate way to use that tool for Madeline's perspective. And so it was a very special collaboration where, you know, we did a lot of body work. I was part of the process of acting, and I don't like to do that. But it was really a lot about positioning ourselves with Madeline and what she was feeling. And Josephine's films aren't about the narrative. They're about the experience. And as an audience member, you are asked to come to the table as a participating member and really feel the same journey. And so I think that that's sort of where our conversations always start, is like, how do we make an audience feel?
And it was really amazing. Our first, when we worked on Butter on the Latch, which was like, for me, my first feature, and it was like sort of a logistical nightmare in the woods. Like, it's a film set at this Balkan folk song and dance camp, and there are like 200 people who attend the camp, and the only crew is really outside of the DP and the sound person is me. So I just had forgotten that there's this whole other job that needs to get done, especially when there's that many people around, of just people walking up while you're shooting and being like, what are you guys working on? You know, which was like the, like 90% of like my job as a director was to try to like kindly, because we were on the camp, thanks to the goodwill of the camp, kindly somehow get those people to leave so that we could keep shooting. And we were improvising the film. So I was like just thinking so much about the writing and the work with the actors who were never acted before. So I feel like I don't think I gave hardly any input on the camera in that shoot. And I just remember being like at the end of the night, I was also in charge of downloading all the footage until like 3 a.m. And but I would look at it and be like, wow, Ashley's so cool. And I think DPs really make or break movies, and especially early work, because I think there's just ways of seeing that have been done a million times. And I think there's something about Ashley's way of seeing, and that really that I saw so clearly, I think, when we made our first projects together, which was that like she has a ton of restraint, and she doesn't care if like half of the image is missing, or if like I had worked in documentary previously. And, you know, if you're shooting something here and then something exciting happens over here, you just throw the camera over there and you shoot the person talking over there. And we improvised Butter on the Latch. So sometimes that would happen. Something would be happening over here, something, and then something interesting happens over here. Ashley would like be here and she would just slowly move the camera. And there would be this time when you could hear something and you can't see it yet. And I was like, for me, it was amazing. And I really think like a lot of my work kind of rests, to be perfectly honest, like on your shoulders in a way, because that people would not have paid attention to those films, I think, in the same way if that way of seeing wasn't so unique and kind of filled with restraint. Anyway, so it was a good collaboration. And this one was really special. We had spent so much time with the actors and with the material before we started that it really became, I think Ashley just knew really clearly what movie, and really everyone that was part of that process knew like what movie we were making. And then by the time we started talking about the image, it was just very clear what needed to happen. Like we needed to be inside her mind when we were inside her mind, and that needed to feel completely different than the rest of the film. And yeah. Ashley built a very special rig to make that possible.
It's seamless. It just feels seamless. It's almost dangerous how seamless it is between you when you flip between reality and the state of mind that Madeline's in. I'm going to open it out to people just after one more question, which is quite specific to your journey as a filmmaker, because I find a lot of filmmakers can usually pinpoint where their journey in film started to a very specific moment in time. I was wondering if there was a specific moment, or almost like a light bulb moment, where you were like, I want to start making films. Do you remember what that was like?
I do. It's really, it's sort of an embarrassing story. I mean, I grew up, actually, I should say that my dad is here in the audience.
Oh, yes.
Hi, Dad.
Michael Decker. Michael Decker's here.
And who very has contributed to this movie in many ways. Maybe the most importantly is giving birth to me. So thanks, Dad.
You myself like the patriarchy. Also,
but also served as one of our executive producers. So thanks. And you guys can ask him questions too when we open to the audience.
Yes,
I would
absolutely.
Really be very interested in what you would might ask. Wait, I totally got lost on what was the you asked what was the inciting incident, right? For the
like your light bulb moment. Yeah. When you were like,
so actually, I mean, I grew up with a father. He's a poet and also a businessman. So I grew up around a lot of poetry and really like world cinema. I feel like I was exposed to a lot when I was young, but I hadn't thought about being a filmmaker. I'd really thought a lot about being a writer, and I was a pretty serious musician when I was a kid. And then got into college and really had no idea what I was going to do after. I was very panicked because school, I felt like I was good at school. And like then when it was ending, I really didn't know what to do next. And I was my roommate of all 4 years of college. We were watching like towards the end of our senior year. I never really got to do this much during college, but the end of senior year, you sort of get to do whatever you want. So we were watching Monsters, Inc. in their dorm room. And I love Pixar. And I was just laughing like a 4-year-old would laugh at that movie. And she just like paused the movie and she was like, this is what you need to do with your life. You love this so much, you know? And I was like, that is what I need to do with my life. It really dawned on me. I was like, I should really make Pixar movies. So that's obviously what I'm doing. But it did turn into like exploring film and film is the combination of everything that I had been interested in: photography, costume design. I had done a lot in college, performance in different ways, and then also writing and music. So it's amazing. You get to do everything, but you know, you sort of don't have to be that, as a director, you don't have to be good at any of them. So you just have to have good taste in collaborators.
Well, thank God for Mike and Sully. If it's like, what is this? Right. Let's have some questions, please.
Josephine, I was just wondering, it sounded like this was a really personal project for you, but I was wondering where the kind of idea for the film came from and what you would try to achieve with it. And then for Ashley, you mentioned about acting as a DP, and I was just really interested to hear a bit more about that.
Okay, so it's funny because in some ways I feel like the early ideas for this project were a little bit too unformed, which was one of the things I think I like also critiqued in the way in the movie, which is just that Evangeline's a little lost, you know, and I went into it with super idealistic notions about collaborating, and we were all going to make this together, and we will just find it, you know, together when we get all these people in this room. And there were a few things that I did know that I wanted to make work about. One was, obviously, I was having had this close person institutionalized for mental illness, I was really like digesting that. But also, I was really curious about family dynamics. I had taken really like the moment that inspired wanting to make this film at all was, there's this like Lecoq style of theater, physical theater. So it's a theater that's sort of built out of gesture and physicality. And the whole idea is to create theater out of movement instead of relying on dialogue or script. And also to gestate a work with actors, to kind of devise theater and let the actors in a way be writers. So the hub of kind of that whole Lecoq training in the United States is this group, Pig Iron Theater. And they have a school, and I had worked with them in college. And so we spent, I worked with them actually on a bunch of different productions doing like important things like playing a worm puppet. That was my big starring role in there. But I also was an assistant writer. I'd seen their process. So they had a 3-week summer intensive that kind of climaxed in a week of clowning. And I felt that even though the first weeks had been really remarkable and you're with these other actors like 8 to 10 hours a day, the clowning week, something happened, something changed. I mean, clowning is so challenging, actually. I mean, it's not exactly, at least in America, we have a very specific idea about clowning. You erudite Europeans probably know like how complex and amazing clown is. But breaking that fourth wall to the audience is so terrifying, you know, and that's really the main meaning of clown, is just that you're talking directly to the audience. So what happened when people would perform and when they would kind of be finding their clowns is I just felt like the people I had met and then worked with for like 10 hours a day for 2 weeks, they disappeared and the real them emerged on stage while they were clowning. And I was so taken by that. And I felt like there were sides of people that I don't think they even knew that they had inside themselves that were so gripping and intense and like beautiful or angry or embracing your own, you know, wretchedness. There's something really scary and enlightening, I think, about that kind of work. So I just got obsessed with like performance as this passageway to truth and to your inner truth, that it might be that when you're in performance, maybe something that you're accessing is more real than yourself that you're projecting in daily life. So I started really thinking a lot about like, how would the camera like move between, like, could you be in a room with actors and then the camera could kind of become something that was like outside that room? And so I started really thinking about the opening of this film of like being a sea turtle in the ocean. And then you realize you're a woman wearing a sea turtle costume in the ocean. And then it's like a woman pretending to be a sea turtle in a theater room, you know, and maybe not, you know, so that kind of that image sort of came to me, and then the movie sort of fell around it.
And me and acting. I was forced to go to the clown camp. I don't like performing in front of people. It's not something that like I get off on. I don't like, I'll be looked at here and that's fine, but I don't like an audience looking at me. So it was deeply painful. Clown is like a misnomer. It was not fun. lots of tears of everybody. But basically, you know, as a cinematographer, my greatest pleasure is bearing witness to great performances and really speaking truth to their performance and really listening. And that has been something that I'm deeply invested in. And for me to be part of the rehearsal process created a different element and a different level of intimacy with the performers, because as somebody with a camera, with a barrier, you really want to be open and feel like you're listening. And that to me is really important. And, you know, I studied experimental film. My background comes from that. Like, I like creating in-camera effects, and Josephine's kind of the only director I work with who lets me feel my bliss in that kind of way. But at the end of the day, you really want to speak truth to whatever somebody gives you. And so working with Helena and working with Molly and working with Miranda, like, they're very different performers. And so you really want to, like, treat them nicely and kindly, and so that they open up to you. And so being behind the camera, I really want to be a present force and, like, a reinforcement to them and let them know that, like, I'm there with them. And I think that that's sort of what this film speaks to, is, like, being with people. And the perspective might be Madeline for most of the film, but I think for all the performers, it kind of created this different kind of community that we could all speak to each other subconsciously and through motion and through touch. And it's a very different process than, say, different films that I've worked on, and a very different style. And so you really want to honor that when performers give this much of themselves, and especially through improvisation, where you're really having people, like, open up in a different way. You want to be there and, like, listen.
Are we going right in the front here? Yeah.
We'll repeat the question.
It felt to me that there was a lot of unhealthy, obsessive behavior in the film that kind of was derailing the creative project that the characters were trying to fulfill. And I wonder if that comes from your own experience.
That's a great question. So the question was, there's a lot of unhealthy obsessive behavior that was in the film that was derailing the creative process, and he wondered if that was related to my own experience or our own experience of making the film, which is a great question. Also, I have never had that question, and I'm very excited to see what happens. I mean, I don't even, it's like, where do you even start? There's so many things. Let's just say, maybe, like, without, like, pointing to or throwing anyone under the bus, like, the film is deeply inspired in some ways by both our work together with the actors, but also when I went away, you have to kind of make something really personal, I think, to make it work, or, you know, access a truth that is part of your truth. So it's like some of the behavior of the two women, or three women, really, definitely echoed experiences that I'd had in my own life, or even interactions that I'd had. And then I would love to find a creative process that isn't unhealthy and obsessive, but I think that's, it eats you a little bit, making art. And I sometimes wonder why I do it, because it's so painful. This movie was painful in a particularly good way, I think. Like, I don't want to, this is all being recorded. I just can't, I'm like, how honest can I be? I just realized that, like, when a movie is painful because you're growing and you're learning so much, and growing is obviously incredibly painful. Like, there was a lot of moments in this film where I felt like I was letting people down, where my focus on the art was so strong that I had overlooked or had not necessarily gotten to focus on the people in the way that I had wanted, that I had intended to, or that, like, a fear of doing something wrong and then wanting so badly to fix that sometimes also clouded having a more honest, open interaction with the people I was working with. So, but honestly, the most obsessive part for me comes out in the edit, actually, also. I just feel like there's a million ways, especially with material like this, you could turn this movie into anything. That gets very obsessive for me. But the more, I guess, growth-oriented letting go of obsession was really in learning how to let myself disappoint people and then be present to their reactions to that. To me, it's kind of what's missing. It's definitely what's missing in a filmmaking process, because you don't have time to deal with people when you're making a movie. You have this insane schedule where you're shooting these really long days. And I think that in itself was disappointing for me and the actors after having this very process-oriented, like, rehearsal section. It's also just incredibly scary to open yourself up to that level of feedback. But I think that was why it was also really growth-oriented. So very unhealthy and obsessive. Thank you for asking.
but also, when you make work that's so personal and deals with people's stories and people offering themselves up, it's always going to be deeply complicated. It's never not. And I think that that was something that was, like, a release to everyone. That was separation of self, separation of art, separation of what we were making. And I think that that's also why this film is so difficult for everybody who collaborated on it, because everyone came to the table with a lot of themselves. And it's deeply personal for everybody. This is like reading a diary entry for a summer, for a year and a half, 2 years of all of us collaborating and talking and growing with each other. And there's always going to be hurt feelings in that process.
Sorry, this is a really boring question. You two have both got like really interesting perspective and aesthetic. And I just wonder what sort of your favorite films and that films that inspired you, because it's, I can't pinpoint something that's anything like this. So I just wondered what stuff inspires you basically.
For me, having studied experimental film, you know, Maya Darren is always somebody who I deeply love. Hollis Frampton, Bruce Conner, those are kind of like my people who I turn to. And then I sort of have more narrative people. I love Lynch, obviously, Claire Denis. My favorite, who I tried getting Josephine to get into when we made Thou Was My Own Lovely, is Carlos Regattas, who I think fails the hardest of any filmmaker working, but also succeeds the best. And his work is so exciting to me because it's so fucking awful. And I find that really inspiring, especially when budgets get involved and people start controlling you or producers start talking over your shoulder and telling you that you're doing something wrong. It's a fear-based system, and it's very scary to experiment beyond that, especially when you're hearing notes. And so he's somebody who I think he's rich enough to not care, but also he creates really important films that fail a lot. And I think that that's something that I've always celebrated about Josephine, is that she's not fearful of failing. And I think that's what makes these films have such friction attached to them, because they don't always work and they will never always work. And that's what's beautiful about them.
It's interesting because I was thinking, when I'm making a film, I get very afraid of like watching too many movies, especially things that could be like it. And I absorb a lot. And so but get like a scared that I'm going to turn into that artist and not be my own artist anymore. But if there are two artists that I would like be very happy if I just magically transformed and turned into them, Andrea Arnold is one of them. Yeah. And Chloe Zhao, you know, but actually the only movie that I think came up when we were preparing for this film, because I'm always really hesitant to even like put pictures from another movie into like a pitch book, because it is funny how I love like paintings or photography, but yeah, sometimes talking about other movies, I don't know, I have like a superstition, I guess. So, but was Diving Bell and the Butterfly, because I think that the immersion and the way of seeing and this like strong subjective perspective felt like something that I was like super excited by and interested in. So yeah, those are some of the ones. But Babe, about the little pig, is my that's my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, what a joy. Right, we've got one more question we haven't really heard from the back.
Hi, this might be a bit ridiculous, but I was quite taken by the hair pulling, and I just wondered if either of you have ever pulled anyone's hair out.
That was great. That's a very good question.
You gotta ask the people I've had sex with, but you know. But
wow.
I've been working here. This is my one day off, so I've had like a couple beers. It's fine.
I don't know. Yeah, my answer is embarrassing, but her answer is definitely better. But I remember in eighth grade, and this sixth grader had been harassing my little sister. And was being really mean to her. And we walked by, I'm from Texas, so like American football is the, you know, you have to go every Friday. It's like the only place to be. It's so stupid. And so everyone goes to a football game from when you're like seven, even though it's a high school football team. Anyway, so we were walking through this crowd and we ended up walking by this girl, and the girl tripped my sister while we were walking by her. And I ended up getting in like a, part of what's so embarrassing is that like, I was probably already 5'7" or something, and this girl was maybe like 4'10". She was so small, but she was so angry and mean and so like scary. She was really scary. And I was like, don't mess with my sister. She's like, don't. And anyway, we ended up like in this like hair pulling, like cat fight. But then I was like, all of my nonviolent, peaceful instincts are not, but you know, it's like you got to defend your sister. Anyway, I don't know that either one of us really won that fight. We just sort of realized that this was a ridiculous thing to be doing in public, and then we wandered off. But that is, I think, the only time I've pulled someone's hair that I'm willing to talk about in public.
What a joyful last question to end on. Please give us a massive round of applause for Josephine Decker.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for listening to this Barbican Screen Talk with writer-director Josephine Decker and cinematographer Ashley Connor. Join us next time to hear more great filmmakers answering thoughtful questions in unexpected ways. In the meantime, please rate and subscribe to Screen Talks via Apple Podcasts, Acast, or your usual podcast provider, or by visiting barbican.org.uk. And we're always keen to hear your thoughts. You'll find us on social media at Barbican Centre. Barbican Screen Talks Archive is presented by me, Ellen E. Jones, and produced by Jane Long for Loftus Media. We'll be back next week with Armando Iannucci and producer Kevin Loder discussing the personal history of David Copperfield. Until then, be well and goodbye.